There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/comedy ad free. That's Amazon.com/comedy ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Okay, let's go.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. Back in the rugby dungeon, as we are, to make sure you get a podcast every single Monday morning, 52 weeks a year, into our ninth season. So, at some point, it's going to be 10 years.
10 happy years. Yes.
Will it be 10 years at the end of the nine seasons? That's maths I can't do in my head. Anyway, it's been a long time.
It has. Just a quick dilemma on 52 weeks a year. When do the games get played? Over Christmas?
But there's games on Boxing Day and the day after.
So do we podcast on the 27th?
Well, it depends if we... We've been kindly invited to something on the 27th that we are checking our diaries.
Last thing I want to do is get absolutely battered and try and podcast. I've tried this before, it doesn't work.
No, definitely not. So if we're battered.
All right, well, here's an idea. You're hearing how the sausage is made right now, but that's fine. You're part of the family. You deserve pull up a chair.
Exactly.
For the board meeting. I say we have something there that we have prepared in advance for Boxing Day, and we'll make no qualms about the fact that will be done ahead of time, and then following the conclusion of the games on those two bank holidays after Christmas, there'll be something there.
Exactly.
In relation to the rugby.
Hey, something there after Boxing Day or on Boxing Day. You're hosting Christmas this year, Tim. What will you be cooking?
I've hosted Christmas a couple of times now. I love it. It's that point, and I was having this chat with Phil earlier. Phil's a couple of years behind with a young family. He's still and loving doing this as well, I might add, Phil is. But he's still doing that thing where you go to one set of parents and you go to them and misses. I remember breaking that cycle, and now it's got to the point where people come to me.
Yeah.
It's like that whole circle of life, and I love it. So I will be cooking a turkey because I feel obligated to, but a rib of beef. A gammon for Christmas Eve that then you can then have as leftovers for... I thought gammon with gammon ham.
Nailed
with dauphinoise potatoes Christmas Eve. Then you can have the leftover ham, cold cut on Christmas
Day. I might copy you with that ham. I think that ham is a superb idea.
But you know, the other thing is if you use the stock that you cook the ham in, make a pea and ham soup.
Yes.
For Boxing Day as well.
A ham or gammon stock is awesome. It is beautifully
really
salty.
So I'm thinking of a rib of beef. I think the Americans have it right, because they have their turkey for Thanksgiving. Get that out of the way with, get it done. And there's something like beef. So rib of beef, I think I'm looking for.
Yeah, I did beef Wellington a couple of years ago, and it was excellent.
You made it?
Yes.
Oh, well, fair play. And was it just pink in the middle? And
It's not bad, maybe not perfect, because Beef Wellington is incredibly difficult.
Yeah, it's really hard to get
because
right.
Because of the layers of insulation around it.
Well, do you know what you need?
Meter.
Meter, exactly.
I do need a meter.
A meter thermometer.
That's exactly what I need.
You've already heard from them. How are you doing, JB?
I'm very well, thank you, Tim. Very good. Well. Enjoyed a great weekend of rugby.
And Phil?
Very good, Tim. Thank you very much.
You're with us. You've already heard our little board meeting and our Christmas planning. So just if you haven't hit subscribe already, do that. Go hit subscribe wherever you get your feed, and then all these podcasts will be delivered straight to you. And it's one way you can, it's one way you can help keep the lights on and keep the podcast going.
Exactly.
And another way to do it is patreon.com/eggchasers. Thanks to all our new patrons this week. There's extra content up there for you, and we really, really appreciate that.
Yeah, there's some crazy results this weekend. Preston got battered by Alnwick.
I did see that.
Have you ever been there, Alnwick?
No.
I even saying it right?
Alnwick.
Alnwick. Do you know where it is?
No.
That sounds like a made-up place out of a Harry Potter book.
It is north-east of Newcastle.
Okay, yes.
So it's in Scotland then, yeah?
Basically, yeah.
In the North Sea, Norway. Yes. Norway's north and east of Newcastle.
Effectively, that's exactly where it is. They must have one hell of a team.
How did Sedgley get on?
They won.
Won reasonably comfortably.
Oh, they're bouncing back now. Mark Atkinson and Sedgley Park. And how did Raffy Quirk's Broughton Park get on?
They lost against Furswood Waterloo, I do believe. But there's no shame in that. Furswood are currently second.
Is Furswood Waterloo? Waterloo.
Yeah, I don't know why they're Furswood Waterloo on the table, but I always refer to them as Furswood Waterloo.
I love that club. That first team pitch, the pavilion, is brilliant.
Yeah,
The pavilion with the chairman's parking outside.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Captain's parking.
Proper club.
Coach's parking.
Huddersfield sadly went down, but...
I got the scar under my... I think it's my left eye. It's like a little... I got a scar at Waterloo. I got stamped on.
They went for a little phase.
I had stitches and ran. I ran in to get my stitches, then ran back out and finished the game, obviously.
Was nice. This for Manchester?
Manchester,
or was it? Yeah, I've beaten them at Broughton Park level. They went through a bit of a bad phase, and I think they're getting better again now. They certainly look like one of the better teams in North West 1, I think. I think they're in North West 1. And the other one is, of course, Albion 1. Which is great news for everyone. Everyone loves that.
Everyone's happy.
Everybody's happy.
Everyone.
When Albion wins.
Even the opposition.
Yeah, especially the opposition.
So news from the rugby week. Johan van Graan's name has come up.
For who?
In relation to Bath. So
it's got to happen.
So the story in the rugby paper says, Munster head coach Johan van Graan, out of contract at the end of the season, has been linked with a switch to Premiership basement dwellers Bath.
So here's a question, right? Why would you trust these guys to ever hire another coach? So they did it by accident with Gary Gold and Mike Ford and Toby Booth and all those boys.
They appointed Gary Gold and he appointed everyone else. And then he did himself out of a job by assembling such a good coaching team.
Group of assassins.
Beneath him, yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, problematic, to say the least. But then... the Blackadder appointment, which seems like a great appointment because he's constantly coming second in Super Rugby. that turns out to be a terrible appointment.
He took the best group of players in the history of New Zealand rugby and failed to win Super Rugby for 8 consecutive seasons.
Yeah.
With the most talented bunch of players
lovely
the world's
bloke,
ever seen.
Lovely bloke, I keep saying this, he's a lovely man.
Well,
he really
maybe
is.
Bath, that's how Bath do their business. I know Bruce Craig gets a lot of stick. And actually, as far as I'm concerned, Bruce Craig can do what he wants. It's his money, his hobby.
He's bankrolling the whole thing.
Yeah, it's literally his plaything. He can do whatever he wants,
it
right?
It is literally his plaything.
Look, he puts him up in Farley House.
Yeah.
He doesn't need to do that, but he does it. He seems to do his business on just hiring really nice guys, regardless of their rugby ability. Maybe that's...
Apart from Mike Ford.
Well, we don't know Mike Ford's not a nice guy, do we? I don't know that.
In Murad Boujalal's style, like the time that he got annoyed that Toulon lost the final and took the plane home and left them in Paris, I think Bruce Craig should... You just mentioned Farley House. He should just shut Farley House. You should just mothball it, put big sheets over all the furniture and say you're back at Lambridge until you start winning.
Do you know what hat day is for the Denver Broncos back in the day? Hat day.
Hat day.
Oh. If they won, they got to wear hats in training. Like, actual, like, stupid hats. don't cost me my hat day was like a big thing. Like, we want hat day. And if it wasn't hat day, it was pads day, contact day. So it's either hat day or pads day. And I think it should be, as you say, Tim, Lambridge week. Or Farley House Week. What do you want, boys?
Yeah, we used to do Chinese Tuesday.
Oh, God.
Win a game. Chinese takeaway after training on Tuesday. Or Domino's.
Oof. What would you prefer after Tuesday? I prefer Chinese after training.
Yeah.
Or if you exit Cheeves, you don't even wait to get changed. You get straight in the bar. The beers.
That is awesome, isn't it?
That was awesome.
That is awesome. That just shows you why they are so far ahead of so many other teams in terms of their fan engagement.
Well, it's why Rob Baxter has managed to, and they've had a wobble this year, but he's why he's managed to do it over such a prolonged period of time, because he gets it.
Yeah.
He just gets it.
The way he was talking about it as well, it's like, no, they need to go and feel what it's like, feel how important it is. I thought that's really quite cool, isn't it?
Yeah, and he mentioned the fact that one guy in the bar, when Rob Baxter was there, there was a guy older than Rob Baxter who came up and was, as he was talking about the game that he just watched, he was... he was practically crying, and he said, the players need to understand what this means.
I think they do. I think they do, because from my tiny experience of being at Sandy Park for all of one weekend immersed in that culture, there's 4,000 people there to watch a bloody testimonial game. Mm. What does that tell you? But yeah, it's exactly that. They absolutely adore that rugby club. And you can see why. You can see, imagine being a kid in that situation and all the players just come in for a cheeky beer. And actually, doesn't it kind of throw...
And they all drink left-handed and
they all
empty their glass when they finish as well.
Absolutely. Right,
proper rugby club.
Rightly so. I was going to say on that, doesn't it sort of throw sand in the face of the sports scientists that said, yeah, do not drink for 2 hours after a game? And they're not, and they're still in their kit. Mind you, that must have gone out the window now, because that used to be an actual thing, didn't it? You weren't allowed to drink for 4 hours after the game or 2 hours after the game.
I remember at one point there was a season where a nutritionist claimed that a fridge milkshake was the best thing you could have straight after a game. Probably not a bad shout.
Yeah, fridge milkshake is not exactly perfect, but it's low fat, decent amount of carbs, medium amount of protein. So it's not. It's not a terrible thing.
It's not a warm kind of calling, though.
It's not a warm kind of calling. It's not a protein shake, but it's not a terrible thing.
Do you know what, though? I think that's gone backwards, actually, in terms of post-match nutrition. Every time I was at the AJ Bell a few seasons ago...
Get on that mic.
I don't remember seeing a team which did not come with a slab of beer for after the game.
Mm.
Like, one of the two teams. And
there's about 25 pizzas ready to go.
Always loads
always.
Of pizzas.
But yeah, even you watch... Oh, if you look at the New Zealand, South Africa, Australia, England, there's always a beer after the game, because there is something about the. It's probably if you're having like 15 vodka Red Bulls, that's probably
pre-game,
pre-game and or post-game.
Yeah,
that's probably going to be an issue. But having a few like relatively light beers, get some calories in you, and rehydrate to a point. It's probably not the worst thing in the world.
Just enjoy the moment.
Yeah.
You've done all that work. You're allowed to enjoy it.
Well, this leads us on to a story which we weren't going to talk about, but I've just remembered it. All of the whinging about the Millennium Stadium and drunks. Mm. All the whinging. So in the Times today, I had a load of letters that have come in from people who consider themselves real fans. And this really annoys me. I don't think there's a point in a live sporting event without alcohol. I seriously mean that. There is just no point to it. Now, I don't necessarily think you want to be stood at the bar for the entire first half, but the whole... If you go to a gig...
I'm just gonna jump in and say, I miss the Hacker because you wanted to have a nice bottle of wine over lunch.
But that was a delicious, crisp...
It was lovely.
Bottle of white wine. It was delicious. Awesome.
Some lovely Roman pasta as well.
If you...
And JB and I just managed to sneak into the Hacker because we put our beers down slightly early in Chicago. We just managed to get pitch side... In time for the Hacker.
Actually, I'm interested if I'm interested in the game, if I'm legitimately interested in the game, I'll watch it at home. Or watch it from the press box. If I spent my own money to go, I'm enjoying it. I don't remember a single second of the World Cup. I don't remember much of Bath Sale Harlequins when I went as a paying fan. And that means
the one time you went on a weekend to Bath, the only thing you talked about in terms of the game was how you were... Giving Dave Ward stick.
Yeah.
In the warm-up. That was
going,
good.
Missed. Hey. Missed. Unopposed to Charlie Matthews.
That was good fun.
It was great fun. And he missed a lot.
In the warm-up.
If you want to listen to a band and you want to study the lyrics, by all means, buy the CD. If you want to get covered in, pints full of urine, well, then you go to the gig. You know, they're completely different experiences.
Well, okay. Well, but here's a comparison I'll draw between a gig, which I go to quite a few.
Never been to one, FYI.
And live sport.
Never been to a gig?
Never been to one, though.
You're not a big muso.
Not at all.
I think for some people, what they're talking about is not the loutish antisocial behaviour, and there was that one kid that got puked on. Like, you can...
Which was not... That was not a funny story.
No.
No one laughed reading that, did they?
No.
It was awful.
Absolutely not.
Terrible.
Awful.
God, that was
terrible.
But
that one story, you shouldn't take the one extreme example and spread that story across a large group of people, because that's not representative. Drawing the parallel with music gig and a rugby match is when... I hate it when... Well, if I go to a gig, if I want to take a photo or something, I'll take a photo at the very start, bang, done, in my pocket, phone stays there. when I have to stand and watch someone's phone that they're holding above their head, and they've gone to the trouble of going to a gig, and all they do is watch the screen on their phone.
Do you know, there's...
For 15 minutes.
You know, what are you, like...
Some psychologists say that people that do that actually are living and experience the moment more than people who are actually living and experiencing the moment. There's something about living through your phone which really... puts it in your mind for whatever reason it is. Maybe it's because it was the 25th
anniversary of Nebworth this year, Oasis's big gigs there in 96. Noel Gallagher was talking about it, and he just said you wouldn't do it again. People keep saying, oh, you should do it again. He's like, I don't want to do that, because he said simply no one had phones. It was insane. You do not get crowds like you used to now.
So the
only reason I'm drawing that parallel is because I think I can understand people getting really cheesed off with constantly getting up, sitting down, because people are coming in, coming out. So I get that, but I wouldn't want to make rules to say you can't do that. There's a limit on the number of times you can get up to go for a piss or have a drink. That's just...
Well, if
they did that, I just wouldn't go. Not because I want to go to the bar three times, but I'm not going somewhere where they have rules and...
Exactly right. And all that and stuff. Furthermore, there are some actually quite sensible rules you could institute. I think you said it, Phil, but they could just let people in... What was it on Twitter? Open the stands in and out in the break of play. There's plenty of
like in cricket where they make you. They'll have stewards there standing, going, "No, you need to wait until the end of the over. Now you can go in."
How much does that make?
Yeah. And cricket, I'm trying to think. So cricket will always have a party stand and then regular, like family stand, party stand, and then regular stands.
Yeah.
So if I'm going to watch the cricket with Claire, we will just go into the normal everyday stand.
She gets annoyed though when she builds a
beer snake. Yeah, when she's chugged her 15th snake bite.
Furious by then.
If you're going with the boys, you're in the party stand, and like you can. It's more stuff is more acceptable in the party stand. Don't get me wrong, you can always have a few beers in the regular stand.
Yeah,
but it is different. There's different expectations.
What I will say is, as bad an experience as it was in the moment, that lad's got an awesome story.
Yeah, I mean, they're missing the point. I mean, if he grows up and he's not telling that story, you know, as some very, very good banter, he didn't deserve to go in the first place. Didn't deserve to go.
However, I think that's a really interesting point. And yes, if there was a party stand, awesome. Like, get me in there, even because,
But the thing
where
is,
anything
right,
goes. But
the sub story will be, we really wanted to take our eight-year-old to the rugby, and there were no more tickets. But one came up in the party stand, and we couldn't believe that people were drinking. And then the way they talk about this, you know, drinking and rugby culture, particularly in South Wales, is pretty intertwined, even more so than here. Like when I go back to North Wales, like the drinking culture there is so much more severe than it is here. And I think it's a step up again when you go to South Wales. You can't disentangle these things, and nor would you want to. You know, the whole idea is it's a little bit extreme, and it's not going to be fun for everyone, so not everyone should go. If you come out of that stadium and you know the tackle counts of both teams and you can give me a constructive breakdown of everything which happened in the lineups, you've done it wrong. You've not gone for the right reasons. Sporting events are nothing but events. If you want to enjoy the sport, stay at home.
Now on the streaker side of things, because I'm all for the drinking side of things, the streaker side of things, I'm actually now where I'd probably institute some harsher rules on streakers.
Like execution?
Maybe not that harsh.
Okay.
Maybe like...
I would have a sliding scale where your punishment is mitigated by being funny or entertaining.
Yeah.
If you said it to us, I think we're pretty fair.
If you can... Yeah, maybe there is a sliding scale downward. So I'm thinking, not imprisonment, but like a harsh fine. Like... £5,000 fine. So you streak, but everyone knows you're getting that fine. Mm-hmm. But let's have a sliding scale then. So the longer you can keep going, the lower the fine is.
For every steward you make fall over trying to catch you.
Yeah, like a fantasy rugby draft style.
You get 500 quid off.
Point scoring system.
That's a wonderful idea.
Defender beaten, off not offloads. Defenders beaten, meters made.
Yeah.
Those are your two targets. If you score more than, I don't know, 50 points in fantasy rugby draft.
What about if you get your hands on the ball? In the instant, 500 quid off.
So if the ball is in play, fine is doubled if the ball's in play.
It starts at double or maybe quadruple, right? But you've already made that risk. You've already taken that risk. You've already, in effect, got 40 grand to pay now, right? Yeah. So because you've taken that risk, I think it's now, if you wanted to go with the big boys, you've got to get the ball and evade professional rugby players. I'm willing to do that. I'm willing to say, yo, you get a grand off for every professional rugby player that you avoid.
Yeah, okay.
And another grand for every 10 seconds that you avoid them all.
Meters made.
Do you know what I would like? I would love a way that, maybe you could do this in dead rubber games towards the end of the season. This would actually really spice it up, where people could pay to have an extra spot on the bench to get 10 minutes in a professional game.
I would pay so much money for this.
You'd crowdfund it for your mate's birthday.
Yeah, but would you have to do like boxing has a professional standards committee. So, okay, yeah, we think you're okay to do it, but we want to have a look at you running around. You've got to do some bench press.
Oh, right,
squat.
Okay.
Is this safe? Because you wouldn't want, like, imagine if you sent one of the rugby bloggers on there. Instant death. Instant death.
You would need to do that kind of stuff. And ECG.
A good amateur player who fancies a chance.
Yeah.
And they could get sponsors or something, or it could be a corporate thing. It's like representing Heineken, it's Jonathan Beardmore.
Yeah. Well, the problem with that would be, I think it was Dalgleish, the Liverpool midfielder.
Kenny Dalgleish, and manager.
Yeah, who was saying this in an old interview. He's saying, like, he didn't really get injured playing professional football, but when he played five-a-side against absolute nobodies, they move wrong and, like, you know, don't tackle properly, or they tackle you wrongly. You know, the problem would be, with an amateur player, knowing just a little bit of knowledge. So, oh, this looks like a good line. Yeah, they all know it looks like a good line. And now you're going to get absolutely creamed because you've done things exactly right.
That's what we want to see.
Now you're going to get absolutely smashed.
A little knowledge can be very dangerous.
Yeah. Oh, I'm just going to run two men out from the ruck. Of course you are. Wham!
Professional poker players make that same point that Dalgleish makes. If they're playing against a professional, they can read a professional.
If they're
playing against a total amateur who doesn't really understand the rules, it's impossible to read them because they don't know what they're doing from second to second, minute to minute.
Exactly. That's why third team games sometimes resemble the Somme. Like, you're on the worst field and there's like a guy with a dislocated arm, and, you know, that's what happens.
I just to wrap that up, I forgot a few weeks ago when we were discussing it that we got sent an email by someone who sent us a video, an old video of Ollie Barkley nailing
was that London Welsh
streaker. I think it was when he was playing for Bath.
Okay,
but a streaker was running around on the pitch, and eventually Ollie Barkley was just stood there with his hands on his hips. The streaker sort of got within about 10 meters of him, and he just went,
yeah,
and just nailed him.
No, there was the old London Welsh number 8. I think it was a Tongan number 8 who absolutely nailed someone.
The heaviest guy in the Premiership. Oh, you're thinking of the guy who came from Scarlets. He used to high shot everyone all the time.
Yes.
Constant red card machine.
Yeah, would struggle to play under the current laws.
Yeah, I know exactly the boy you mean. So, let's talk about this weekend's rugby, because it's
Just very quickly, we don't have to talk about it. I was going to say, Ellis Genge's contract is up at the end of the season, and there's lots of suitors. So Bristol are apparently trying to...
No, don't go there.
Bristol, surely not. Surely not going to tie up another 8 to 10% of their playing budget.
They don't have the money.
They do. They're going to have to jettison like 10 other lads to do it.
And they'd happily do so and then bring them back on minimum wage.
And Saracens are looking at Benno Abano, but obviously are keeping tabs on Ellis Genge as well. One that we mentioned as a potential when we were spitballing ideas that Leicester could go with as a fly half, and for all the noise is that Andre Pollard has done, which surprised me, but fair play. But we suggested Ohio West, and it looks like Newcastle are going to get him.
Ohio West is going to go to Newcastle.
That's the rumour at the minute. La Rochelle for Kingston Park.
I mean... Sure, if you want to, but I'm not sure I'd be making that move. Who would make that move? That's insane. Unless he's the marquee player, which, of course, he'd be qualified to do so.
He could be a marquee player.
How much more money would you need to go from La Rochelle to Newcastle? No disrespect to Newcastle, but La Rochelle are one of the top teams in Europe.
Yeah, yeah.
With a relatively good coach, an enormous pack.
Great location.
I mean, the location is awesome.
Yeah.
And you're going to go to Newcastle.
It would take a lot of money.
Because he's not... I don't think he's cheap, is he?
He's not... He's a very good player. He won't be cheap. He certainly won't be as cheap as Will Haden Wood, for example.
Yeah. Still Will Haden Wood. You've got a good player there.
Yeah.
I'm Brett Cannon. Conan. Like both. Conan Cannon.
Conan.
Conan Cannon.
Close enough.
By the way, we've had so many great emails to contacttechchasers@gmail.com. I'll try and pepper the podcast with some of them. One came from James Crone, and it just had the subject title to contacteggchasers@gmail.com, big strong boys. Was the subject title. Have you seen this?
Now you're talking.
And it said, for attention of Phil.
Yes.
And a link was sent to, I'm just opening it up, the Exeter Chiefs store for their exposed 2022 calendar.
Ah,
already
nice.
Got it.
And I think it's worth looking at just the shape some of those boys are in. It's quite impressive. I'm looking at it now.
Oh, so I've just opened it up. It is just a line. The only thing is FAO Phil hyperlinked to...
Hyperlinked, yeah.
Yeah.
So...
Very nice.
Those boys are in incredible shape.
Which ones? Yes.
I do you know who I was... Oh, no, surprised is the wrong word, but he is incredibly well-shaped. Jack Yendall.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that.
Yeah, look at those shoulders.
He's in great
pecs, shoulders, traps.
Don Armand looks like a proper man. Yeah. He looks like a...
Don Armand's got unbelievable shoulders.
Yeah,
unbelievable.
His shoulders are incredible.
Is Hendrickson on there?
Yeah, Hendrickson's on there. Of course he is. In the back.
Yeah.
No, not Witten's not.
Witten's not.
No,
Hendrickson
not.
Looks small compared to Henry Slade.
Yeah, that's part of that is just that he's further back.
Yeah.
He's far away.
And then... What's the Scottish scrum half? His arms and shoulders are looking good.
I know exactly who it is. I've interviewed him.
What's his name? Double barreled.
Hidalgo Klein.
Hidalgo Klein. His arms and shoulders are. Yeah.
Good. Good.
Yeah.
It's good.
Right. So.
Tasty. So. if you do want to buy me a Christmas present, this is $14.99 from Exeter Chiefs store.
Oh, and they've got the little star. On there, I've never really noticed that, but because it's on a shirt, you don't really notice it. They've got the star there. Nice.
So, Andre Pollard?
Yes.
Are we in favour of that?
I didn't think it would happen because the rumour was that someone in Japan had offered him seven figures. So, I assume that means Leicester Tigers. They won't be paying that, but they'll be paying big money.
You know, have to be big money.
Yeah.
And it's also going to depend, does he want to take his rugby seriously? And no disrespect to Japan, but it's not serious rugby. It's not. It's not super rugby, which is not that serious.
No one watches or keeps tabs on it.
Yeah, you've got to be top 14 or Premiership. That's where you've got to be for serious rugby, I would say. I guess you could play some serious rugby in South Africa.
Super rugby, I think.
Yeah.
It is. Certainly, if you're a Kiwi team, that is some serious rugby.
That is, yeah. That's fair. So, I mean, it's okay. It's not what I would be doing, I don't think. I don't think I'd commit that amount of money to an individual. I think I'd go for somebody younger. And
he's not that old, you know.
28.
27.
That's prime. He's got his prime years ahead.
He will be 28 when he arrives, but he's currently 27.
Yeah, he's 95 kilograms and 6'2", which I quite like. So he's a quite big lad as well.
I think he's more than 95 kilograms as well.
Do you reckon?
He's a big, strong boy.
Yeah.
Big, strong boy, is he?
He is.
Yeah. It's the sort of move I'm not that keen on because it's trying to replace like with like, isn't it? You've got one scrum half, one fly half going out, one megastar going out, one megastar coming in, but they're not like for like, and that's why I don't like it.
They're like for like as in their international calibre tens. They aren't like for like in terms of the way they play. Mm. They can do very similar things, and George Ford is very good at controlling the game, but he has the distribution, and he has the tactical side, and he can turn a game on his own from a distribution perspective, whereas Pollard feels more solid and stable. Probably his defence is better, his kicking probably on balance is better, both at sticks and maybe kicking corners, but I'm not sure he has that distributing skill set.
Yeah, exactly.
Or certainly we see it less than we see Ford's.
He's much more Farrell than he is Ford.
Yes, that's a very good way of putting it.
I mean, if they could have Owen Farrell as their 10, they'd have it in a heartbeat and be very, very happy. Yeah, so would. Andre Pollard, he's a World Cup winner, Lions Tour, Lions Series victor. He's one of the best fly halves in the world. There's you couldn't really pick anyone gettable better than him.
That's why you don't do it, in my opinion. So they're going to get him. I don't think he's as good a playmaker as Ford. I think Ford is a bit of an enigma, actually. Him and Marcus Smith are probably the two outstanding playmakers in the Premiership at at the moment.
Agreed.
And they don't really need much help. I think Pollard would need an extra helping hand just to spark off the back line.
In the way that Willie LaRue
acts
as, he often acts as the second pivot or first pivot, but playmaker in that South African back line. Mm.
So, because, of course, Pollard is South African, are you aware that he's South African?
Did I know that?
It might have been mentioned.
Yeah.
I
know one or two South Africans who play professional rugby.
Yeah.
I gave someone a call to see what he's like, and apparently he's an absolute outstanding individual. So
that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, the way he's described to me is basically a little bit like Dan Biggar-esque.
Oh.
Very, very nice guy, incredible professional, driver of standards, all of those good things. So you can see why they'd want him. Well, aside from his rugby, it's those sort of off-field intangibles. The reports you get back from him are absolutely magnificent. Of course, they would be, wouldn't they? Because he's a World Cup winner and he's beat the Lions, and that's the reason that he is who he is. So I think, even though I don't agree with it, I can understand why Tigers fans might want to be excited about it.
Yeah.
I think they should be excited about it. I am a little bit surprised, because he fits the Borthwick mould, or he can fit the Borthwick mould, arguably more than George Ford does. It's just the fact that it seems to me an un-Borthwick move to basically throw their pay structure in the bin, because they will be paying. He will go into the Premiership as one of the top five highest paid players in the Premiership, undoubtedly.
Yeah, it's just not healthy, is it? It's not healthy for a team to have one guy
so far ahead of anyone else.
How much? Oh, it doesn't really matter how much rugby he misses. Leicester have got enough that they'll get themselves to the business end, and they just need him.
Well, I mean, if Leicester are filling out 25,000 like they did
today, exactly 26.
I mean, that's brilliant. That's truly brilliant.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
They're going to need more than him, though.
Fair weather fans. No, I'm joking.
Yeah, exactly. Where were you when they were losing? I wouldn't go when they were losing, to be fair.
Not the way they were playing.
Awful. Yeah, it's going to be quite exciting to see how they rebuild this. I wonder if there's a lesson for Leicester, though. So you look at Saracens, they got in South Africans. They're very easy to find South Africans. They're very good. It gets you so far, and then you've got to sort of unstitch it all. I think Sale are finding out this the hard way, because Van Rensburg has been linked today, leaving. There's all sorts of people linked with leaving Sale at the moment. How true it is, I don't know. But at some point, particularly with the EQP stuff, you're going to have to unstitch us all. Leicester Tigers today had three South African back rows. They're going to have Nomoy Nadolo in their team. They're going to have Andre Pollard in their team. At some point, they're going to have to redress the balance and look at having more EQP.
And Moroni in the centre.
Moroni's another one, yeah.
Harry Potter and Aussie.
He's EQP.
Yeah.
Montoya might be their best signing of the lot.
Mm.
And of course,
Montoya.
Montoya. Who came up with that? It's Montoya.
Well, you say it how they want it to be said.
Not if I can't say it.
That's one of the things, the number of times that people would go, why are you saying Nadolo?
Do you want to hear
rather than Nadolo?
Do you want to hear?
Because that's how he says his name.
Do you want to hear the latest nonsense which came across my attention today?
Go on.
People should now phonetically spell their name, because of people with hard to say names. They might.
You've mentioned this before. This I don't believe this is a thing.
No, this is a thing. I read it today in the Times, no less. And
not in the sport pages or in the sport.
This is in the business section, I think. So, along with your pronouns, because that's of course vital, you should put the phonetic spelling of your name, because if you have a hard to pronounce name, you might consider it to be a microaggression, something which didn't exist 5 years ago, because people think you're unimportant for not learning your name. But here's the irony of it, right? If you've got a hard-to-pronounce name, well, you know that. You expect it. So why on earth do you, Tim, need to put your name phonetically on LinkedIn? Because everyone knows your name, but the reason you do it is to support them with their hard-to-pronounce names. And it's insane. Everyone's insane.
On LinkedIn, everyone is insane.
Yes, that is true, actually. On LinkedIn, everyone is insane.
I don't have any social media now.
Do you not?
I lurk occasionally. As I said last week, all I've done on Twitter in the last month is retweet my butcher once. Yeah, nice. That's it. Other than that, nothing.
That's a good way to be.
And I never look at mentions. I don't even click on mentions anymore.
Smart. Very, very smart.
Yes. I don't want to know. I don't care. Anyone whose opinion is important to me, I will either seek or they will tell me.
Yeah, you can phone them.
Yeah, I'll phone them. Yeah. I'll speak to them in person.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Well, I guess talking of Pondre Pollard, why don't you talk about Leicester Tigers' performance today? It was awesome. The whole game was awesome.
Yeah, it was. Well, right.
Just before we do that, something you mentioned before the pod was, and it's a point that we made already on the pod, but Pondre Pollard might not be as strong as Ford in the distributing, playmaking stakes. So perhaps Leicester Tigers, and with Freddie Stewart at 15, who is excellent, but not really a distributor, or something we've not seen, we've seen limited amounts of that so
not
far.
In a Vili Leroux, Alex Good type fashion.
Yes, absolutely. And Dan Kelly, who again is excellent, but is not really a distributing.
In a Mark Atkinson or Henry Slade type fashion.
Mm. Yeah, and then Mattias Moroni or the Scottish fella.
Matt Scott.
Yeah. Again, all great players, but not really distributors. Maybe Leicester would be in the market for someone else to go along to accompany Pondre Pollard to get
to distribute the work of George Ford across more than one position.
Yes,
the elements that he can do. Yeah. Not to say Pondre Pollard doesn't have things which George Ford can't do, because he does
undoubtedly.
And if they manage to get someone to take up that role elsewhere, they might have a net improvement.
Definitely. Yes.
Well, so, yes, it's an interesting one. Like, who would you go for? Now,
well, I've mentioned two of them, Mark Atkinson and Henry Slade.
If you could get either of them.
Well, I've thought of some others. Devoto would be nice.
That's a good shout.
Devoto is not a bad shout, yeah.
Because he seems a bit like less. Yeah, he doesn't seem to be as important as he was for Exeter.
Is he injured, I'm assuming?
Must be, because he's so important to him for a long time.
Yeah.
Adjomo, I love.
Adjomo is a good shout.
Eastmond, back from the dead.
Possible. There was rumours that he was going to resurface in rugby league at a point in time.
He did, and then retired. He went to Rhinos.
Oh, okay.
And then retired.
And then retired almost.
But this goes to a point, I think it's what Phil was getting at, that we have talked about a lot. The one place on a rugby field where there is a real... Is dearth the one where there's a lack of?
Yeah.
There is a huge dearth of distributing centres. And the Premiership is the perfect example of this.
Yeah.
Because there is... There is Henry Slade, Ollie Devoto, and
Mark Atkinson.
Lazowski?
Alex Lazowski, yes.
But Lazowski's, he's a distributing centre who can also play 10, which I guess the others would fall into that category.
Yeah.
In a similar way to Sam James.
Sam James, there you go.
Yeah, that's a good
perhaps.
One.
Perhaps. Another one, I've not really seen much of him for a while. I assume he's injured. And I wouldn't go for him if I was, anyone really. But not a bad player, Piers Francis.
Oh, interesting. I thought you were going to say Ryan Mills.
No, Ryan Mills would be another one who I do like, or certainly I did last time I saw him play about 4 years ago.
Oh, I tell you the one. Malinder dribbled off the face of the earth. When he was playing 12, he played some of his best rugby.
Oh, yeah.
Where is he now?
Another body wreck. He's in Japan.
Is he in Japan?
Oh, yeah. He went to Japan, didn't he?
That would be
a nice pickup.
Because
if you can get him fit consistently.
Get him on a pay... Per play. Who was the footballer that was like...
Yori Littman.
Go pay per play. Yeah, that's right.
Yori Littman. So, just on... what's his name? I've forgotten his name now.
Pondre Pollard?
No, the lad in Japan whose dad's a coach.
Harry Malinder,
thank you. Like, when he played 12 for long stretches, this must be 5 years ago when he first serviced, at 19 years old, he was the best player on the field occasionally.
He played a bit of wing, bit of 13, bit of 12, bit of fullback.
10.
Yeah, I hope he can. Yeah, and he was in the England squad. People forget.
Yeah,
he made the England squad.
But he had some bad injuries, didn't he?
Yeah.
How old is he now? 25.
25?
Yeah.
Tell you what, he's got to be careful because that could be a career over before you know it.
Yeah.
25,
now,
okay.
With the injury record and getting what I presume would be a nice, tasty contract in Japan... With that injury record, you can't blame him. Like,
no.
Get the money right. But also, hopefully, because the stresses and strains in Japan will not be as great as playing week in, week out in Premiership and European competition. So, hopefully you get...
Depends if he's on the strong zero or not.
Oh, God.
Avoid the strong zero at all costs.
And gyoza. And deep-fried octopus.
Ah, takoyaki. I went to try and source some takoyaki in London the other week.
It's not worth it.
Couldn't get it.
Yeah, it's not worth it.
They'd run out.
It won't be the same. It won't be as good. Where was that? Because I feel...
Osaka.
No, in Manchester, because I feel I was doing Manchester. the same thing the other day.
Oh, really?
Yeah, where was I? I saw it on the menu and they didn't have it, or they ran out. That's why it sort of triggered me.
Mm.
Do you know what this stuff is?
No.
Oh, my word. So, it is deep fried octopus balls in batter.
Okay.
Right, which sounds great, yeah. And it is great. And they serve them in like almost like egg trays kind of thing. They sell it with sort of dried shrimp flakes, dried prawn flakes.
It's also got like a, almost like a teppanyaki and then like a mayonnaise, like a slightly creamy sauce drizzled on it. But it's also, it's not just octopus. So takoyaki, taco octopus and yaki fried. It's not just octopus. It's also got like a, almost like a fish cake quality because there is like a potato or like a maize starch type thing that binds it together. And they serve them fresh out of the fryer in Osaka. It's like Osaka street food.
It's hotter than the sun.
So hot. And you cannot possibly resist biting into these molten hot balls of takoyaki.
The terminal damage that you do to your mouth,
it's worth every second. Well, then you just cool down with a nice, refreshing, strong zero.
Exactly.
Minus 196 degrees.
The prime time for eating is around 2 a.m. 2 a.m.
That's street food. That's awesome. Yeah.
You can eat a lot of takoyaki at 2 a.m.
Yeah, almost unlimited high fun.
Wow.
It's so good. It's one of the best foods I've ever created, I go as far as saying.
Amazing.
What was this?
So we were talking about Harry Mallinder in Japan.
But the dearth of creative distributing centres to accompany up and down type fly halves like Andre Pollard.
What do Atkinson, Slade and Lazowski all have in common?
England caps.
Yes, that is true. But more to the point, they all started off as club tens. Atkinson in Wasps, Lazowski in Wasps.
It's a great shout.
And Slade, obviously, in Exeter. So I think you go looking. And do you know who else played 10 quite a lot for Bath? Devoto. So I think you go around looking for slightly bigger tens who are second choice and then move them out one.
So the lad at Exeter, Harvey Skinner.
Yeah, that's a good one because he's 6'2", isn't he? But he looks like Henry Slade, so that'll do.
Yeah, he's pretty slim, though, at the moment.
So hang on.
He's putting a few kgs.
Most of the targets that you're looking for can all come from Exeter. Slade, Devoto, Skinner.
I find it hard they'll be able to prize Slade off Exeter. But the other two might be a fair game.
Yeah, I'd say so. And then, if not, it'd be Redpath, who, again, played a bit of 10. Or
are there any fullbacks who are?
Freddie Stewart.
I'm just thinking of other players that, because if you were a rugby player right now, I would be looking at that and going, if I had the skill set to potentially be a creative 12, I'd be looking going.
I reckon
there's a World Cup spot up for grabs.
I reckon there is an army of lads who fit the 6'3", 6'4" mould, who are playing championship or academy somewhere. And just aren't getting any game time. I bet who played 10? I bet there's loads of them.
They're probably on Wasps' radar at the moment.
Yeah, let's show up at Wasps and dominate some situation like Dan Frost.
What about players around the world who could fit this?
That's what I was also going to ask. Is it the same in the top 14 where Andre Pollard is? I mean, he had Alex Lazowski outside him last season. But are there more of these type of players there? Because we've got Untermack, obviously, he can play there, but plays 10 for his club.
JB made the point a while ago, I think it might have been Gitto, that the French ball playing 12 is not really a thing.
No.
Because they have the Petit Général.
Because, precisely, yes.
Yeah, everything's sort of moved in one.
Yeah.
They get big ball carriers like Jonathan Dante or, I was going to say Matthew Bastrow, but that's not true because he played 13.
He did play 13, yeah.
But then you got the, you know, the...
I was going to say that was going to be the blueprint for Sale, effectively, was Faf, AJ, and then Manu and Johan... So two massive centres.
They can't live without Sam James.
He is
the straw that stirs the drink. And again, creative centres make a huge difference.
You mentioned there could be a World Cup squad, place on the line for whoever takes this place. Like, Piers Francis went to the last World Cup.
Exactly.
That is the role that Mark Atkinson has been brought into the England squad to potentially fulfil.
And which Alex Lazowski will be eyeing up.
Also want to fulfil. Yeah. And Devoto has been in and around the England squad. It could have been any of those boys, but the roulette wheel stopped on Piers Francis in time for the World Cup.
Yeah, and of course, the most famous 10 come 12, Owen Farrell. So maybe Owen Farrell outside of Andre Pollard if you want some real creativity.
Or go back another World Cup, and if you're a back row with a good handling skill set, you could carve out the Sam Burgess.
Oh,
Sam Burgess was just following in Richie Vernon's footsteps.
Because there are some great back rows with soft hands.
Yeah, that's what they need to do. Get on the phone to Sam Burgess.
Sam Burgess, Richie Vernon, Lavani Bottier.
Perfect.
There you go.
Solved.
Oh, let us know what you think on that. Contact@toechasers@gmail.com.
Two others I'll mention from around the world.
Okay.
One, it will never happen because he's a former Tiger, but it might actually be quite a nice fit. Matt Tamua.
Yep, perfect fit.
Perfect fit, except the fact that he's been there and done that.
Doesn't fancy it again.
Yeah. The other one, maybe not because of his age. He's 34 now, but if you get a couple of years out of
him. Say Ryan Crotty. Come on.
I'd love Ryan Crotty. But no, I wasn't going to say Ryan Crotty. I was going to actually say Hadley Parks.
Hadley Parks?
He can do that role.
Can he?
Yeah.
I mean, he can scaffold your house.
He kind of can do it all in an Andre Esterhazen kind of way.
Is he 34?
He is 34.
Crikey.
Do you know what? Just before we jump into the rugby, because it's related to this, if we do this quickly, there's a good email from Peter Shaw, who's one of our American listeners. We have a lot of them.
A lot of them.
And so you're very welcome, and thanks for listening on that side of the pond. Hope everybody there is well. He says, I love the many nuances and aspects of rugby that few Americans would recognise or appreciate. Things like respecting the kicker and keeping quiet, having beers with your team and the opponents after the game, respect for the referee, brackets minus Razzie, etc. He says, there's one aspect of professional rugby I do not understand. What is the point of signing players for the next season when you're still in the middle of this season? Trades during the season, I understand. I also understand clubs severing ties with Ashton or Sippers at any time. But officially committing to a new team while playing for another team seems a bit odd. It never happens in US sport.
No, it doesn't, because they... why would that be?
Because they have shorter seasons. Like the NFL is only...
They have pretty brutal transactions. It's like cut. You can just be cut at any moment.
So I think there's two reasons, really. One, just the way that sport has organically grown in the US, or where US sports have grown. And two, because rugby, when it doesn't know what to do, just copies football. So football, they come to the end of their contract, they sign a new one, or they get bought out of their contract. We don't really trade players. It's very rare. May and, I can't remember his name now.
Yes, second row, who former Leicester captain.
Ed Slater.
Is the obvious one. There'd be one there. And I think Leicester got the worst of that deal, judging by how Ed Slater went in. Actually, that's not true. Because even though May didn't play much for Leicester, he was still their top try scorer almost every single year.
Yeah, he was still class.
He was very good.
But anyway.
Yeah. So that doesn't really happen. There have been no transfers in rugby because it's got this like weird sort of halfway house between being an American-style sport with a cap, but then trying to also follow football. So I don't really know.
And there's not that much money in it as well.
No.
So the way that you would do it, if an American... What they would expect is a season ends and you have a free agency period where people whose contracts are up negotiate with clubs.
Mm.
But I guess the point, Peter, is unlike in American football where the season finishes in February and begins in September, February to September, yeah. Rugby finishes in June, or it was this season, it was the first week in July, yeah. Starts again, start of September. So it's just a condensed off-season.
It's probably more to do with when you're legally allowed to talk to players. Because you're legally allowed to talk to players in the middle of last season or middle of the current season, that's when everyone gets their business done. It'd make no sense to wait until the end of the season. So it's just a race, isn't it?
Because you've only got a 6 week or 8 week period at the in between seasons. You'd be doing your business while pre season's going on.
Yeah.
So your team, and this was one of the things about having the playoff game for the championship to go up to the Premiership. It meant that the teams getting promoted didn't know whether they were getting promoted until like 4 or 5 weeks before the new season started. So they can't, unless you've got very deep pockets, i.e. Bristol, you can't build a team.
Everyone else has already built their squad. You're left
exactly
with the scraps.
Yes.
Piers O'Connor.
Less distributing.
I'd take him.
Very good player.
Anyway.
Leicester Quinns.
Yeah, shall we start Leicester Quinns?
Because we've done
everything well. I thought it was awesome. Absolutely awesome. Maybe the score doesn't look awesome. Maybe if you're watching it, it wasn't great. But I love the way that Leicester just threw down the gauntlet to Harlequins, which is, hey, you think you're good at rugby? You think you're the best team with ball in hand? You think you're going to be able to counter-attack against us? Well, here are some high balls. Go and deal with it. I loved it.
And both teams in defence and set piece, both teams threw down the gauntlet. They were challenging each other. Like Quinn's, some of their set piece, both offensively, their line out and their scrum work, but also defensively, I thought they were awesome.
Yeah, this is one of the things which I really liked about the game, which is this is a legitimately great win for Tigers because I thought Harlequins were very good.
Yeah.
And they were good in ways you don't expect Harlequins to be good.
Yes, but, that's kind of the point I was trying to make Harlequins.
This game reminds me of England versus Wales. Gatland's last season, maybe, when Wales beat England. I can't remember if it was at Twickenham or the Millennium Stadium. And England came in as heavy favourites because their pack was monstrous. They were running over everyone. Mm-hmm. The defence looked absolutely awesome. And Gatland decided, right, the way I'm going to beat England is to pick and go around the fringes, which, of course, is nuts when you think about the size of England's pack. But that's what stopped the line speed, yada, yada, yada. This is similar in a way. I mean, if someone told me the way you beat Quins is to kick the ball to them and let them attack you, you'd think that they're nuts. But that's exactly what Leicester did.
It's not exactly what they did.
Go on.
They actually had a lot more possession, but the weather changed the picture.
Yeah, but you can only play what's there.
No, exactly, but that's what I'm saying. So they actually started by trying to keep the ball for a little bit to deny Quinn's possession, but then the rain started to come in and they smartly went, no, let's just get the ball down there.
And they just pinned them down.
Yeah.
In the last 10 minutes or last 20 minutes, I'm not even sure Harlequins got into Leicester's half, and if they did, it'd be like once or twice.
They did
just
right...
Just when Lina scored.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then right at the end, they got the two penalties... And then fluff the line out. They just snuck into Leicester's half and fluff the line out.
Set pieces are important. Line outs are important.
They fluffed the 5 metre line out in the first half when they went for the corner rather than points.
Yeah.
I think Quins will be kicking themselves.
Well, two losses in a row now. I mean, we know they're good. I think they can be quite comfortable with these two losses because, well, like I say, we know that they are really good.
Yeah, we know they're really good. We know Quins are really good. We also know that Leicester Tigers going to Leicester with 26,000 people there in playing against a Leicester team that have not lost yet this season and pushing them that close, being in a position to have won the game.
Do you think Leicester have had the definitive performance yet, which makes people go, yeah, they're really good? Because at the moment, I'm still thinking that most of their wins, particularly against Saracens, maybe today to a degree, is a little bit like, oh, it's a coin flip. They got a bit lucky. They've not had that definitive performance.
Well,
they've
beaten the two teams around them. No, not dominantly, but Exeter and Quins, which I think today when they played a pretty much full strength Quins, you go, okay, yeah, they're seriously legit.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
But it was tight, like you say. But they play this weekend. Which French side do they play?
They are playing away at Bordeaux.
Away at Bordeaux. Like, that is seriously tough.
It's big boy rugby,
If they go and take Bordeaux, they are 100% legit.
Tell you what, Europe's going to be a nightmare for Premiership teams this year because Premiership teams, every single Premiership team is very strong first 15 wise. I'm not sure if they want to sacrifice their first 15 in Europe. Maybe they will for the first game, and if they get through to the...
Yeah, it's only four all rounds again.
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, first two games, then make a decision.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they'll go full-blooded.
But it's what it means for your Premiership campaign if things go wrong. So if you lose and you lose a few first-team players in the process.
But if you're Leicester and you've got 9 from 9 in the Premiership, you'll go, let's go hard at Europe.
And you've got a 9-point lead.
You've got a cushion.
And we've got a cushion, but we back our squad anyway, so we'll be fine.
Mm.
But if they get two wins, also that's the other thing, if they get two wins for you in Europe, the first two rounds of pool matches, they'll go, all right, well, we can relax on one of those weekends in the new year.
So I think this
equally, if they lose, they can go, well, don't worry about that.
I think this is where Saracens start to struggle now, because they are going to take... No, they're not, because they're not playing in Europe.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so...
challenge.
Yeah. Forget it. Yeah, they'll send some kids up for that, I'm sure.
Yeah, because Saracens, the injuries to the likes of Jamie George and Owen Farrell, it is stretching their squad a bit.
Yeah.
And they've not got as deep a squad as they had when they were spending more than the old salary cap.
Exactly.
Never mind being under the new salary cap.
Yeah, so that's a bit tricky for them. Exeter will be fine. Exeter still look to me as the same strong squad. Obviously, they've had their own challenges. If I'm Exeter, I revert back to the last year's style of play, because I don't think the refs will pick up on it.
In Europe.
Yeah, I think they'll get away with it.
But also on Exeter, just having the boys back that they've had the last couple of weeks, having Yanis Kirsten and Dave Ewers and LCD's back now, and Johnny Gray's back, like, that makes a world of difference to their
huge
squad.
Huge difference. And we'll get onto them. But how, Ben Youngs, how good was he?
Pretty good.
Best game I've seen from Ben Youngs for at least two or three seasons.
In a Leicester shirt.
No, probably just the best game I've seen for at least two or three.
Oh, he had a really good game against, was it Australia? He had a blinder.
He did have one good game, actually. But this, I think he played better today than in that game.
He was really good.
Yeah. Last time I saw him play well was probably, he played well for England against South Africa about 4 years ago.
Yes, really well. When he
really well.
I mean, it might be longer ago than that when he sells a dummy to Peter Steph the Toy. It must be longer ago than that, because I remember Peter Steph the Toy being a nobody.
Yeah, he was just a kid then.
Just a kid. So it must have been,
like 6 years, 7 years ago.
Yeah, 7 years ago he played really well for England.
Yeah. And he's had his next best game since then. He did play very well.
And they made this point on BT Sport. The old boys are playing really well. Danny Kerr and Ben Youngs are really, really coming into their own this year. I think Scrumhoff does have the element of the wise old head works well. Certainly seems to historically in France. Not to the extent that it is with the fly half, but certainly similar.
Definitely. Well, look at Wigglesworth coming off the bench.
Yeah. Because, of course, you've got to cover so much ground at Scrumhoff. And I don't know because I don't play Scrumhoff, but I imagine getting to every breakdown and barking orders and having to pick up the ball. I know it sounds like a little thing, but having to be so close to the ground constantly must be a nightmare. And they do, I think, statistically, they cover the most ground of all players.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me at all. You don't... With Scrumhoffs, you don't need to be the fastest, although occasionally it helps.
It helps to be Raffy.
See Raffy de Quirk.
Yeah.
But having a good engine on you, and also you don't need to be the biggest, obviously, because of the position. So you're not worrying if you're struggling to maintain 78 instead of 82 kg. It doesn't really make much difference.
Yeah. Yeah.
As you're getting older.
Reading of the game, being that quick.
It was a really intense, full-blooded match. Loved it. And I also, I loved, I know a lot of people complained about the quality of the rugby. I loved Exeter v Saracens.
I did. I really enjoyed it.
Because you knew it really mattered.
Well, it reminds me of the Leicester Tigers game.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a packed stadium. It was, I don't know about you, I felt that Sandy Park was a bit icy cold because they were nervous. They were really edgy. And Saracens, they took it to them. It's a tight thing.
And you don't often see, and I'm not saying it was because it was Saracens, but I think it's because of what you say, that a win was so important. There is the extra edge with Saracens as well, but you don't often see Rob Baxter immediately after a game go up and hug his kids and his wife.
No.
Yeah. Which he did this time. And the fist pump through the rain at the end.
Yeah, they really care. They really, really care about this game. Do you know the bit about this game which has really, really annoyed me? I'm pretty sure that you can guess. And no, you can't because you're not on social media. So, the Billy Vinopola-Luke Pearce interaction.
Okay.
So everybody's talking about how brilliant it is that Luke Pearce marched back Billy Vinopola.
Twice, 10 metres, so 20 metres, which took them from inside their own half to 3 points. Right?
Yeah, kickable.
Now, I'm not saying it's good, I'm not saying it's bad.
It's the difference between a draw and a loss, if you take that in isolation.
Yeah. Well, I'm not saying it's good or it's bad, right? I'm not saying Luke Pearce is wrong to do it or right to do it, or that we need more of it in the game, or that rugby's a special sport because of it. We don't know what Billy Vinopola said to him. And I think if you're going to say the game needs respect. The respect needs to go both ways. Billy Vunipola is a very seasoned international with a lot of things to say about the game. Now, if Billy swore at him, was disrespectful, by all means, march him back.
If he swore at him, Luke Pearce didn't go far enough. He should have sent him
off. Yeah, he sends him off, right?
So he didn't do that,
yes.
I'm sure.
So I would like to know what Billy Vunipola says before I universally declare this is the best thing ever. Because I just don't think... I don't think it should be default lauded that a referee marches a player back, particularly when you don't know what has upset him. Do you know when commentators say... Not just commentators, but everyone really. The referee's lost the game, he's lost control of the game because tempers flare. And it's actually nothing to do with the ref. I mean, I don't know how a ref controls that.
Well, in football, you do see that because a bad challenge is not penalised, and then another bad challenge flies in, and then another bad challenge. So I've not seen that kind of commentary very often in rugby, but you do see it in football.
But you do get it in rugby. I've played in games where you feel like you have to take the law into your own hands to sort out an issue which isn't being sorted.
Yeah, sorry, I mean, I've not really seen it at professional level.
Is it once or twice? Maybe I'm thinking
so,
more.
So not in Premiership, because the refereeing generally is so good.
Yeah, the refereeing is good. But, you know, if Billy was pointing out something like, hey, that's inconsistent, or there's actually some feedback there. I mean, maybe there's a time and place to do it. Well, I don't think it's just like an automatic, oh, that is brilliant. Like,
What we did pick up on the referee, Mike, was I think there had been a few incidents before that, and there were a couple subsequent to that where he actually gave a warning and said, next time it'll be a yellow. And then Mako did it, and he didn't give a yellow. He gave another warning. So one of the things in one of those exchanges near Saracen's own line, when Max Malins, I think Luke Pearce got the decision wrong. It didn't. Max Malins didn't touch it when it went into touch from a crossfield kick, and Max Malins complained to it. And one of the things Luke Pearce said at that point, he called over the captain, who I can't remember who it was now, but anyway, Alex Good. He called over Alex Good and said, "Look, we talked about this before the game. Conversation comes through you. I can't be having three players coming up and talking to me." So clearly, Luke Pearce had said to the players before the game, no chat.
Yeah.
And I gather it's something which the referees together have, and the powers that be have decided, this needs to be a focus. Because, and anecdotally, we talked about it since rugby's returned, we've noticed a bit more chops in at mini level right through to the top level. So clearly, my point being, the referees have identified it. The powers that be have said, this needs to be addressed. The referees before the game say, look, I'm watching for this. The DORs presumably all know it, so you can't then complain if in a game he enacts it.
So I would say it's got to be reasonable chat. You've got to make a decision. I'm happy for Luke Pearce to make a decision. I guess my point is I don't think it should be lauded as the best thing to happen in rugby. And I don't like it. I didn't like it when people used to praise... Oh, what's his name? Why can't I remember names today? Nigel Owens for telling jokes, because it just encouraged him to tell more jokes. I don't like that confected, oh, this is look how different rugby is. I just want really good officiating. Luke Pearce is a really good official. I have no issue with him doing it. I have no issue with any of his calls. And even when he does get a call wrong, which he will inevitably, that's part of rugby. Wrong calls are part of rugby. I just have a problem with it being default, oh, isn't this brilliant? And it's not. I think the way we need to look at the game is, if a seasoned player says something to you and he's got a point, maybe consider it. Or maybe say, you know, not now, but later. And I don't know what the background was to it. Like I say, I'm not criticising Pearce, per se.
But what Billy Vunipola does in that situation...
talks to his captain.
Goes to Alex Good and says, look, can you just have a word? And that's it.
I'm actually on this. I know we don't know what Billy Vunipola said, but we know a little bit of the history prior to this game, as you've already mentioned. We know Luke Pearce is very good, and we know Billy Vunipola spoke up after he'd already been marched out back 10.
Now, so I was stupid.
So I'm kind of willing to give Luke Pearce the benefit of the doubt in this.
The second one I'm much more easy on.
Yeah.
The first one I've got a bit of an issue with, because I don't know what he said. The second one, okay, shut up now.
Yeah, you've just been marched back 10, and you can see he's still... he's talking furious. As he's walking past him.
And he starts pushing Jackson Ray around. So whatever it is, he's absolutely furious.
Yeah.
It's quite interesting, but I think we should all just calm ourselves. It's not the best thing ever to happen. It's not the best thing to happen in that game, let alone in rugby
I think what you saw bubble out is a sense that this is something which has been becoming a problem.
Yeah, there's a bit
and so all of those feelings that people have had for a while, and we've, you know, people make jokes about, even his own teammates make jokes about Dan Bigger having a chat. Even his own teammates do that. Like, that's right. It was when I was working on TalkSport, and I worked with George North for a couple of weeks, and he made that. He went, oh, surprise, surprise, Dan Bigger's having a chat with the ref. And so even, you know, I think there's a sense in a lot of people that this is something which could go down a path where you can't come back from.
Well,
and so it's almost symbolic. It wasn't. It was actually all of those feelings that people have had that something's not right. Oh my word! It's the same when someone finally penalised you. That period where they went, we're gonna look at feeding and stop that, and someone actually free kicked the 5 seconds at the back of a ruck.
Yeah, it's open.
When Wayne Barnes. Yeah. Penalised and said, right, you've had your time, scrum. Everyone did had the same reaction. Like, this is amazing. But they never happened again.
Yeah, did it. Yeah, well, Ruby reverse type.
There was something in some officiating that did make me think, oh, JBL like that. Did you see the tackle on Hugh Jones basically held up for a try? Might have been Freddie Stewart, but might have been Maroney.
It was Potter.
Was it Potter?
Seatbelt tackle.
Yeah, the seatbelt tackle. Did you see what happened on the seatbelt tackle?
No, I don't remember.
So Jones butchered a two-man overlap, for starters. Yeah. But he backed himself. He backed himself, went for it, for 10 metres out from the try line. Harry Potter managed to stop him and brilliantly hold the ball up over the line as well. By started with a seatbelt tackle and then rolled him onto his back, which last season would have probably been a penalty try.
Yeah, it would have been. 100%.
Yeah, but it was... play on. It was looked at, and it was play on. And the point that Ben Kay made in comms was the referees have looked at this and decided seatbelt tackle is not dangerous unless it hits the head. So play on.
Ah, never heard that interpretation before, but I'm happy for it.
Yeah,
Definitely happy for it. Yeah, that's encouraging.
We would have been. If it was last season, we would have been having a discussion now on how that decided the game.
Yeah, that there was a penalty try then. We would have also been making the point that. Well, that is only 1 point, and Leicester Tigers had 78 other minutes to turn the game around.
All those usual things.
Yes, but you're quite right.
Yeah, on unusual try-saving antics, did you notice Max Malins giving some ground up to take an extra player over the line to get the 22 dropout?
Yeah.
22 goal line dropout.
Goal line dropout.
Max Malins has been listening.
Yeah, he has. He's a player, isn't he?
Was that the one with like 3 minutes to go? Because there was one with about 3 minutes ago where there was a big overlap on the right-hand side. It was Joe Simmons and it might have been O'Flaherty or someone else on the wing. And the ball didn't come out. I can't remember who dived over the line, but got held up over the line instead of just one pass or two passes.
It was flats, I think.
It was try time.
Yeah. Yeah, they got the try in the end. And like you say, Luke Cowan-Dickie, Johnny Gray...
Dave Ewers, Yanis Kirsten.
Kirsten coming off the bench, it's huge.
Yeah. They are big names off the bench, aren't they?
Yeah.
There's a few big strong boys there.
There is.
Coming into that team.
Yeah.
I am delighted that Exeter won this because they were starting to struggle a bit and all of a sudden it's got very competitive.
Yeah, so you prefer the racist rather than the cheats?
Do I prefer racist to cheats? Yeah, yeah, I think so.
In this specific fixture.
Joke. If anyone hasn't listened to old podcasts, joke. God. I just want to jump towards the bottom of the table for a second. We've had a really cool email looking at Bristol, and they got a beatdown on Friday night.
They're rubbish.
They did.
A beatdown.
This game could have been closer. If Leua finishes that try, if the Singleton try isn't given, I'm still not 100% certain it was a try, but... Yeah. A couple of things got away, but back to the point I made before, Bristol had plenty of opportunities throughout the game to just be better than they were.
I cannot believe how wrong I was about Gloucester and Bristol.
Me too.
Before the season.
Me too. I had both of them at opposite ends of the table
to
where they currently are.
Yeah.
Completely wrongly. I didn't... Gloucester have been a revelation to me. I was not expecting this at all.
I think I can shed some light on this, on both these teams. So it's also culture, lads. I don't know if you know this. Culture's a big thing.
You're big behind culture. Have you been reading Stuart Lancaster's book?
Yeah, yes, I absolutely have.
It's massive. Culture is huge.
Huge.
Yeah, it is.
So,
Saracens and Exeter became European champions.
It's one of those things which, if you have to talk about it, you don't have it. And the fact that Pat Lam talks about it so much makes me very, very suspicious. I think there's a direct correlation between talking about culture and emotion and messing things up. And I think that's what's happening at Bristol. And we'll talk about them in a little bit more detail later. I can tell you right now that the boys in Gloucester are absolutely bouncing. They are just loving it. And it seems to be, like Leicester, the best way to get the most out of your players is to get rid of all of your good players and the remaining ones just play a little bit better. So they got rid of basically two massive Springbok locks and a hooker and a few other. I think they got rid of 11 lads in the off-season. Something ridiculous. And they're just playing absolutely brilliant rugby. But yeah, it's all about working hard for each other and getting your basics right. They're very good at the set piece now. They're very good up front. They're very good indeed. And then, here's a thought. When you have a lad like Mark Atkinson or George Ford, back to that, you can afford to work as a coaching team on the basics because you know that the attack is taken care of. It's one of those things which I kind of say these guys aren't worth paying the money for, but actually they are worth paying the money for because that means you
focus on all the other stuff.
Exactly. Yeah, and I think that's exactly what's happening. And proper coaching.
Gloucester, you can see they've built around the set piece, and Skivington specifically said that in his post-match interview. They've built around the set piece. They've got the most driving mall tries in the Premiership this season, and they got another two, one penalty try and one from Jack Singleton, question mark over it. But it was given as a try. It was a try. So
I also enjoyed the reluctance of the penalty try given for Gloucester. Did you see that? So they scored, and then the referee just looked, because it's a yellow card, I think.
Yeah,
gave the yellow card.
It's a yellow card. Goes, go on then, penalty try, and everyone goes, penalty try.
We have some fantastic listeners, lads, and very great. They make great points all the time on email. And another American listener getting in touch, Lewis Elliott from Oklahoma City.
Oh, nice.
He's emailed contactheadchasers@gmail.com. He says he was watching Bristol's collapse, in a heap this season. Reminds him vividly of what happened to the Atlanta Falcons, giving up that 25-point lead in Super Bowl 51 in 2017. Incredible
points.
Match that was. Incredible game.
Falcons have just lost to Buccaneers, by the way.
Have they?
Yeah.
Well, this is kind of Lewis's point. They've never recovered. It shot mentally. That appears to have just shot them. The hangover of losing in that fashion was so damaging to them. They've just gone backwards since.
I can see that.
And he's drawing the comparison with Bristol.
It's very interesting because I'm on record of saying I thought Bristol would be so hurt, so wounded by that, that they would use it as a positive springboard to transform them, to keep them going in the same direction as they were last season when they finished top of the league. And correlation doesn't necessarily equal causation, but after that 28-0, after they were up 28-0 and ended up losing that semi-final in the fashion that they did, it seems that they have not recovered.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there are plenty of things going wrong at Bristol at the moment because they're on such a bad losing run and they just can't seem to do anything right. But did it all stem from that one moment?
It's interesting.
Very interesting. Very interesting parallel.
It is, Lewis.
Thank you, Lewis.
Lewis also just says, Bulls v Sharks in the Ultimate Rugby Fighting Championship. Lacanuam doing some very, very Lacanuam things. Sensational.
Yes,
excellent.
I need to run to the bathroom. I'll leave you chatting for a minute.
Go for it.
Too many cups of tea earlier.
Exactly.
What should we talk about, Phil, whilst we're waiting for Tim to get back?
Do you want to talk any more about Bristol and Gloucester?
Yeah, let's talk about Bristol.
Gloucester were great. Bristol, not so much.
Yeah, there's something seriously wrong at Bristol, and I think this is going to be... I'm not sure what's the worst deal. Danny Cipriani's 1 year or Pat Lam's 7? Excuse me.
Bless you.
Yeah, I mean, they're both horrific wastes of money.
Yep.
Did you see the BT Sport segment this week with Bristol?
No, I didn't.
Now, I'll tease this for when Tim comes back, but I do not know how you do a segment like that when you know something's... I mean, it was... BT Sport have got to show Bristol in a good light because Bristol have let them through the door. Get it. but everyone must know that something's not quite right in that. Pat Lam has got a quote in there saying, our culture's all about love. And I just don't think it is. I think it goes back to my point about them being, about fraudulent coaches. You know, if you sign for Pat Lam, it's all about love, and you find out that he's a maniacal dictator, it's going to be a slight problem. I think he's probably more maniacal dictator than he is New Age hippie. And it's a bit, I think it's becoming a real problem. I think that squad is not happy. Not only do I think they're not happy, I think they dread losing and the week that is in store for them if they do lose. I think it's an absolutely miserable environment. And the losses are compounding now. That's why they're getting worse and worse and worse.
Well, I can see that if you hate losing, I can see it being an incentive to not lose. But then when things are going wrong for you, it will compound it. When things are going wrong time after time.
So here's my question for you, Tim. Being in broadcasting, Bristol are kind enough to let you through the doors like they did for BT Sport this week. Nick Millens did some great interviews with Pat Lam and the coaching staff. How do you paint Bristol in a fair light? Bearing in mind there's obviously stuff going wrong there, but you need to also make them look okay.
But also, how
do you be honest about it?
I'm answering the question, but I'd reflect as much back on last season when they rightly finished top of the league and they were the best team in the league for the majority of last season, and give that as much weight as the 8 or 9 games this season.
Yeah.
Or at least in saying, clearly you're in a very different place at this point this season than you were at this point last season. Why? What's changed?
Yeah, what's changed? Yeah.
Well, it goes back again to my other point, which is people are complex. So I think that Pat Lam, in his camp, losing is an absolute nightmare, and I don't think that the squad are enjoying it. That said, when I say people are complex, just remind everyone what was said by Skivington at the end of the Gloucester game.
So Skivington,
I didn't see this.
Is really interesting. Obviously, interviewed by Bayfield and Ben Kay. After the game, and he was effusive in his praise of Pat Lam, because last season, when obviously Bristol were in and around the top and finished top, and Gloucester were really struggling down near the bottom half of the table, Pat Lam, who doesn't know Skivington, picked up the phone, gave him a call, and said, "Look, do you want to spend your new DOR? Do you want to spend some time talking things through?" And Skivington took him up on it, and he was effusive in his praise of Pat Lam, said, it was a very generous and very nice thing to do, but also that some of the conversations that he had with Pat Lam around systems and structures Skivington said they were fundamental to the work that he has subsequently done to get the Gloucester team in the position it is today.
Yeah, I think that's a really, it's just an interesting point, isn't it?
It's a great thing for Pat Lam to have done, to just pick up the phone Obviously, Pat Lam is a far more experienced director of rugby than George Skivington. Well, is still now, but certainly was back then. And they were both at opposite ends of the table at that point in time.
That speaks to the man a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what I mean. You can't, you build a narrative about someone and then you think, actually, maybe it's not all completely true. But I do still stand by the fact that I think he's having a negative impact on that team at the moment with the losing. And I think the winning papered over a lot of cracks.
What's Occam's razor, the simplest solution is quite often the... Is that one?
That's Occam's.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
Hanlon's is the don't attribute malice where incompetence...
Correct.
Where you can attribute incompetence.
So let's go with the Occam's razor thing. What is the most obvious...
The most reason? Obvious thing is, as we've said many times on recent podcasts, literally millions of pounds are tied up in players that aren't on the field. In a salary cap world, that's not going to work.
No, it's not.
Yeah, and even when you've got... two of their most expensive players were on the field. Three of them were on the field at various points in time, but Luatua, Piatau and Randrandra. But they are so expensive. They are some of the best players in the world in their positions. And it's 30% of their squad in three players. 30% of their salary cap in those three players, even when you ignore the fact that Nathan Hughes and Kyle Sinclair were not involved in the squad. And that's another 20%.
Yeah, totally. And think about it. One person we mentioned earlier, who we never mentioned this season, not because he's not an excellent player, he is, Piers O'Connor. We mentioned him all the time the last couple of years.
Yeah.
And that's because not only is Semi Randrandra incredible in his own right, his sheer presence creates space for other people around him. So Callum Sheedy was getting incredible chat, and so was Piers O'Connor, who, let's look at them, they were either side of arguably the world's best rugby player.
He's up there. Well, yeah. I do think when I see them both on the same field, I think Piers Howe is better than Rad Ronda.
Oh, they're both so, so good.
I think Rad Ronda makes too many mistakes. I think he constantly makes mistakes.
Constantly does ridiculous things.
He does yes, exactly. Unbelievable things.
Unbelievable.
His first touch, he runs into contact and offloads it. It's pretty cool, isn't it?
He didn't do much else besides that, though.
Yeah.
Interestingly. But yeah, that was awesome.
Just ask Matt Jess. No. Phil Dolman, how he blows him down.
Dollars.
Dollars, yeah.
Dollars will let you know.
He's schooled Randa. Yeah.
Dollars gets moved to 13 in a B to Exeter B team.
Game over, yeah. Semi.
Sorry, Semi. I actually do worry when I saw Semi was playing, because I thought he was out till the new year. Mm. I was like, and you've seen it before where players get rushed back because the team's struggling. Semi's so expensive and so important. Has he been rushed back? Is he going to have a niggly injury again?
Yeah.
I seriously hope not, because he's such a good player to watch.
If I was Pat Lamb, I might have been annoyed at Semi Randrandra. Well, not for going to the Olympics. No, I probably would have been annoyed at him going to the Olympics.
I'd be furious.
Yeah. And then
livid.
And then to get injured and then to stay longer in Fiji than was intended. It's not been great. But he's back, so that's good.
He is back. Yes.
Yeah. They have issues. Gloucester, as I say, I was completely wrong about both clubs, so sorry against Gloucester.
Yeah, well, luckily Bristol have Leicester Tigers next, so they can bounce back there.
Just as a little segue between... I'm just going to chuck another email in, because we've got so many good ones. Just a segue between games. This one from Adam, another American listener, this time from New York. Mm. He says, long-time listener, love the pod, blah, blah, blah. Other niceties to be inserted here. Firstly, you've mentioned in a podcast recently about your seeming reluctance to return to New York. I missed the last time you were here. I know a lovely rooftop bar with a gorgeous view of the Empire State Building.
Go on,
some Negronis for your next visit. So, all right, Adam, you might
go
you
might on,
tease this back.
If there's a good game, I'd consider it.
Yeah,
all the restrictions are lifted and we can party freely. Yeah. Then we're in.
Yeah, we'll see you there.
I'm not going anywhere with restrictions, including Wales.
We've got your email, Adam. As and when we can. In fact, here's something which you wouldn't have known. I don't know if we mentioned this. JB and I had a meeting. Phil was in London working. He would have been there. It's not that we didn't invite him. We had a meeting with some people with a view to put on a big live event.
Oh, didn't we?
In New York, we had the venue. We had drink suppliers. We had a lot. So we know we have a lot of American listeners. We know a lot of people from the UK would love to have a Super Saturday in New York.
Yes, if we had Super Saturday in New York, we could start at 9 a.m., do all three games, and then the MLR kicks off. We'd have, I think they might have back-to-back games. We'd have five games back-to-back.
Yeah.
That's almost too much rugby.
What?
Almost.
Oh, almost.
But as we discussed earlier, when you're watching it in a pub on a Super Saturday, or... rugby is just the context.
Exactly, yes. Exactly.
It's the vessel. It's like a vessel that carries your drink. It's the vessel that carries the fun that you have. So he says, secondly, so yes, thank you, Adam, for that. He says, secondly, as the topic of gay rugby came up in this past week's podcast, I just want to point you in the direction of Mark Bingham, because we were mentioning names.
Yes,
and Bingham Cup.
I wasn't aware of the Bingham Cup.
What? Yes. Are you not?
No, I wasn't.
He played at Broughton Park a few years ago.
I was not aware of the Bingham
Cup. Bingham Cup is the Gay Rugby World Cup.
Yes. Yeah, so he was a gay rugby player that was instrumental in the fight to take back Flight 93 on 9/11.
Yes.
There's now a global biannual rugby tournament held in his honour. An incredible person, and reading about him or watching some of the documentaries is well worth the time. I will seek that out, Adam, because I had no idea.
I didn't know that was his history, actually.
Did you know? I'm surprised. Yeah, it's an absolutely incredible story.
So go back and listen to the podcast last week if you don't know what we're referring to. I've had so much feedback on that segment, all of which, other than one email, has been remarkably positive about the incompetence of Premiership rugby.
If everyone had the same opinion, it'd be dead boring. And everyone's opinion is valid and welcome.
Yeah. So a lot of people have been very, very complimentary about that, which is good to know that I'm broadly speaking along the right lines there. As for the Bingham Cup, it's an awesome event. Broughton Park held it. Everything seems like last year.
Raffy Quirk's Broughton Park.
Jonathan Bain was Broughton Park. I'll have you know, 10 years there. yeah, it was in Broughton Park. I say a few years ago, probably like, God, it's probably like 6 years ago now. But a huge event.
Yeah, or even slightly before that.
I was
going to go on to the other games.
Well, I'm going
to
do one more.
Okay,
I'm just going to keep this going.
You're really hammering these emails. Mm-hmm. There's some great ones.
He's missing Twitter, isn't he?
Yeah.
Well, no, I want this. We have. I'm just going to complete the American emails.
Okay. All right.
With Nish, and Nish works for MLR. And is a long-time listener of the pod.
Is
one of many, many people who've got in touch this week to let us know that we came up very prominently on their Spotify Wrapped for 2021, where Spotify gives you all the stats about what you listen to most through the year, and a lot of people have sent us screenshots and whatnot of Egg Chasers coming up on their Spotify Wrapped, Nish included, who says that he really enjoys the passionate, diverse perspective on all things rugby and around the game. And he works for Major League Rugby and has done for the last 4 years. We are watching that competition grow, and we're going to get behind it as soon as we can, Nish. He says if he can help with anything, inside scoop, tickets, and NOLA Gold jersey, Tim. Yes, I'll have one of them. Feel free to give him a shout.
Nice.
And here's the final sentence.
Oh, yeah, go on.
Eliminate the knock-on, you say. Watch this space.
Uh-oh.
Wow.
Finally, I get my way.
That is interesting. I was going to say on the Spotify, thank you to everyone who sent a message. I saw a few that popped up on Twitter, one of which was, I'm not sure if the individual would want this attributing to them, but someone sent us their screenshot of Spotify, which said they'd listened to us for over 6,400 minutes last year, which is more than 100 hours, which is more than 4 days, nearly 4.5 days of this year, of 2021, they have spent listening to us.
I listened to us for 4 days.
we've lived there. I'm almost amazed that we have been sat collectively for more than 4 days in the Rugby Dungeon.
Well, if you want to really show your appreciation for the podcast, I wonder if this might happen on more than one occasion.
Patron.
Because it's happened to me. Well, yeah, there's obviously that, but if you go to sleep listening to the podcast, and then it'll just listen to the next one. That's
clever.
Tick. That helps.
Oh, yeah. Bump our numbers.
Have you ever fell asleep listening to a podcast and then just woke up in cold horror? So twice this has happened to me. I fell asleep listening to one podcast, a very dry political podcast, and it ticked over to the next one, and the host was interviewing some utter psychopath. And he was screaming down the microphone.
Oh, God.
And I woke up to these just horrible screams. And the other one was, I can't remember who it was. It might have been a Dan Carling podcast. And it was just the most vivid, horrible description of someone being dismembered or something. And I just remember waking up in cold sweat, that was awful. Horrendous. Maybe I've done it with YouTube as well. You've got to be careful what your podcast run into. But listening to us, you're not going to have any blood-curdling screams or vivid descriptions of decapitations.
Not too many.
Well, one or two.
Maybe occasionally.
They might listen for long enough, falling asleep, they might accidentally click over to the episode we did on a roof drunk in New York.
Yeah, let's talk about
that is at least a good few years ago. It's about 5 or 6 years ago.
Yeah, you'd have to be in a sort of coma for a couple of weeks to listen to enough to get through to that one.
So this week, my betting didn't go well, put it mildly. I lost my
key. When the fun stops, stop.
Yeah, yes. It's stopping rapidly now. Saracens lost, which is bad for me. Tigers won, that was bad for me. Those are my two close games which I didn't get right. Remarkably, I've got every other one right, and that includes Worcester winning, London Irish winning. I'm actually more proud of that than anything else. Worcester, they look like a side reborn. They are a side reborn.
Well, I'm going to say one thing. Bearing in mind that Phil and I have both acknowledged how wrong we were about Gloucester and Bristol in the opposite direction at the start of the season. Your London Irish top four is still looking a stretch, but it is not looking as far-fetched as it once did.
Yeah, I mean, it is countered by Sale Sharks and Bristol.
Yeah.
Yes.
Let's never forget that. If I get lucky with Sale Sharks, I've been completely incompetent with the other two.
Yeah. The Sale Sharks and Bristol, were they performing anywhere near where they did last season, the top four would be far more congested than it is now.
I mean, it's not going to be a battle royale for the top four.
It will be, yeah, yeah.
But I think
Irish are legit.
Even like 3 weeks ago, it did look fairly ludicrous, the top four suggestion. Now, they're doing a lot better.
Andrew Livingston has just texted me. Andrew Livingston, Egg Chasers RFC.
Yeah.
With this little tweet from Rugby Europe. Please give a warm welcome to Kosovo, who have become the 47th active union of Rugby Europe.
Hello.
Tier 2 tour. I'll answer that for you now.
Tier 3 tour.
No.
Kosovo.
No. That will not be happening.
Not yet. Maybe in a few years' time.
Actually, if Matt goes with us, I'll feel safe.
Yeah.
Matt and some friends.
Yes.
There's some great countries that have rugby teams that we could go to. We talked about Holland.
Yeah, but they've got to be hot with a pretty vibrant drinking scene. Rooftop bars.
Bosnia?
Nah, not so much.
I really fancy trying to do the Portugal-Spain game in either Lisbon or Madrid. Or anywhere else that it is.
That does sound good.
That's the one I want to target this year.
Yes, I agree with that.
But London Irish, great performance.
They're a good team.
Ollie Hassel-Collins, some great finishing.
He went to the same school that I did.
Did he? Mm. Oh, I'll tell you what. So today I went to, this is a bit nerdy actually. Yesterday, I went to Ascot and I came back today because I took the kids around, some Santa thing, which was terrible.
But, oh, I'm so glad those days are gone.
Oh, God. It was.
I mean, lovely and beautiful while it lasts.
Yeah, it was great that they enjoyed themselves. Yeah. I couldn't bear it.
Did you have like a 3-hour drive to go around?
Three and a half hour drive for 4 hours of Santa.
And for a 3.5-hour drive back?
Well, we went last night.
Did you go down just for that?
Yep.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. What's
Yeah, exactly.
That sounds
You're
awful.
Insane.
Well, it doesn't really matter too much because driving down there, I watched BT Sport app, so I got the whole game. So
okay.
I didn't
yeah.
really care.
While driving, that's of obviously, course. Yeah, fair
no,
enough.
No, not whilst driving. No, God, I'm not reckless. The kids drove. yeah, I did that. Here's the point. Because I look at all of the rugby scores every single week, I was driving past. I mean, I've got no association with that part of the country. I felt like I was driving past rugby royalty. Went past Newbury.
Yeah.
Had a very strange reaction when I went past Marlow, because everyone hates Marlow, right? We all hate Marlow. I mean, I don't hate Marlow, but I know Aylesbury hate Marlow, so therefore I hate Marlow. I do not hate...
It's a great rugby club.
Yeah, I'm sure Marlow's great, actually. I'm sure it's great, but,
It's I'll tell you what, it's obscene, because I've got some friends that live in Marlow, and we stayed with them one weekend, and their boys play rugby and they're around the same age as my son Lewis.
You told me about this.
And they just went, well, just bring him along to train for the day. It was like coming from central Manchester and then inner city rugby in Manchester and then going to Marlow for mini rugby. Like, we've got just enough players to put a team out, and that's because one club nearby folded and we absorbed a couple of their players. Go to Marlow, it's like, oh my goodness me. You cannot move for players.
Well, they didn't beat
hundreds of them.
Well, they didn't beat Aylesbury this year, so just saying FYI. Yeah. Reading, of course, who did beat Aylesbury. And so as I'm going up and down the M40, I'm like, oh yeah. And they win that game. Mm-hmm. So there you go.
Mm.
But Santa cost us something like £500 for the four tickets.
This is insane, mate. What are you playing
at? 10, 11 hours of your life.
Of my life.
Oh, my God.
Plus, God...
Did you
a couple of hundred on
hotel. Did you have any part in this?
No. And then when we got there, they then sell you things. So, bauble, £20. The best one I've got stung for was a bag of maize to feed the reindeers. Not their reindeers. Right, so they've got actual reindeers knocking about, and they sell reindeer feed. I just assume they're going to give us a reindeer feed, and then we put it in the trough of the reindeers and feed their own reindeers, right? Okay, nice. No. They give you the bag of... Oh, it's barley, right? They then add 2 spoonfuls of some stuff, which is called magic, and then they sell it for £4.50. And you can't say no at this point. I've got a bag of barley for £4.50. Livid.
Oh, my God.
Livid. It's very nice for the kids, but, my God, it hurt the wallet.
Not so nice. 3.5-hour drive down there and 3.5-hour drive back.
I could literally go to Barcelona for the weekend. It'd take me less time and cost me less.
Yeah. Do you reckon your happiness would increase if you went to Barcelona for the weekend?
I can't even imagine how much it'd increase right now.
Oh, mate, that hurts.
That sounds painful.
That hurts. I hate those. As with anything, you will do anything to get that smile because it's golden. Even saying that, I'd be smiling through gritted teeth the whole way around.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. It's just because they like it. It's the only reason to do it.
You can pay them back. This is why when kids get to teenage years, parents go out of their way to be embarrassing in front of their friends. This is why. Payback.
They deserve it.
Worcester.
Awesome, isn't it?
Yeah. Worcester. Great result, obviously. Very close.
Iron Dew.
He was ace.
He's awesome.
He was ace.
He's earning his money doing that. The try he finished and the try that he set up for Simpson was... That both those were awesome. Absolutely awesome.
Rugby teams aren't built on paper. So you think, oh, I need my big second row, I need my park, and then I'll add the fly half. Just add a massive winger. You'll be fine.
And he is both enormous and rapid.
Yeah. Just a little bit of extra space that you had this game. And I think Wasps, as good as they are, they're not particularly physical. So he's a nightmare for them.
Wasps will be all right. They dig in. They really do.
And they come back. They never die. They're always scoring. They've always got some kid that they've picked up from the championship who's
Dan
ace.
Frost again.
Dan Frost getting a brace.
No big deal.
I loved his first try where the commentator confused him with Minozzi because of the athletic line he cut in the back line.
Vea Fafita's a good signing.
Yeah, he came off relatively early in this game. He is a good signing.
Yeah,
I just think when he gets together with Launchbury, they've got a real, real strong second row partnership there.
Yeah, and he can. So obviously he's a big, strong boy, good in the line out, good in the set piece. But when he opens up, his try against Argentina, it was about 4 or 5 years ago now, was unbelievable. Where he gasses it in from like 50 yards.
Yeah,
there's not too many second rows in the Premiership that can do that.
Yeah, I mean Finn Smith was on form of the week. I don't think he missed a kick. And of course, that'll be because Diamond's there now. But Diamond will be doing the kicking coaching.
Yeah, maybe.
Diamond told him just don't
miss a kick.
Don't miss.
Don't,
all right, boss.
Don't miss kicks. Okay, there you go.
Yes, boss.
I did see. Did you see? So the two yellow cards for Worcester. Do you see who got the second one?
Tell me about the second one. Is it Kitchener?
Kitchener, yeah, from a good foul. I've not actually seen the
ref must have got it wrong.
I simply cannot believe that Andrew Kitchener or Graham Kitchener would have done anything. They're both from a very good family.
Very good family.
Yeah, I don't see how it could possibly have happened. Great game. I'm delighted that Worcester won. I think 5 wins is not beyond them now. They're three wins in. I mean, that's bloody tremendous, isn't it?
Mm.
3 wins. Also on 3 wins. Bristol Bears, Sale Sharks and Wasps.
Bath would kill for 3 wins.
They would. They really would. And they got absolutely annihilated. It was
by
not close. This is worth dwelling on, actually. How bad they were. They just don't want to defend. Anyone says go and get them a defence coach. They don't deserve it. I don't know why I'd waste my money on a defence coach for this bunch.
Right, and this... We've made jokes about Wolves and Bears and line speed and all the rest of it. There are some technical elements to defences, particularly when you're matching up against different teams with slightly different approaches to play every week. I get that. However, a massive part of defence is just attitude.
Yeah, wanting to do it.
Yeah.
Just wanting to do it. But like, they're not folding around the corner. So I'm not joking when I say this. We wouldn't accept those standards at Didsbury Tok H. Now, granted, the game's played at a little bit of a faster pace in the Premiership than it is at level 8. But you've also got slightly better players. I mean, not much better players, but a few better players.
And slightly better conditioning. Not much better conditioning.
Not much.
But you know, slightly better conditioning.
The top 5% makes all the difference, right?
Yeah.
But they're just not doing really basic things. They're not folding around the corner. They're not numbering off. It's just really, really basic. And you think, if you can't be bothered doing that, why should I go out and spend money on a defence coach? You know that. If you were doing everything, but maybe your system was the wrong system, or you only dropped
two back to field kicks rather than three, or you know, something technical. And you go, okay, maybe we need a coach to analyse what the attacks do and then come up with a smart defensive system around the line out or around the breakdown or something. But you're talking about teaching kids rugby, like literal kids rugby, and they can't be bothered doing it. I think, I mean, it's got, it was a joke about Stuart Hooper. Oh, sorry, Stuart Hooper turned into a bit of a joke. And you've said it a lot, Tim. The players need to be responsible, and they need to be responsible for this.
That's not to exonerate any DOR from being influential, because you look at Quinn's last season,
yeah,
and sometimes it just doesn't work. And clearly, with hindsight, you can say whatever the chemistry was there with Paul Gustard, it just didn't work. That's not necessarily, that shouldn't be a reflection on him. Sometimes it just doesn't work out. So I'm not trying to exonerate it, but players need to take responsibility for what they can control. And when you're not defending, when you're not doing basic, because again, you could have a defence coach in there. I mean, you don't, it's not like Steve Diamond says to Finn Smith, "Here, Finn, don't miss." You know, it's not if Diamond went in there and went, when a player runs at you, tackle them.
Yeah, harder.
Yeah.
Harder until they drop the ball.
Yeah. Keep your eyes on the ball. Don't turn inwards facing the wrong direction when there's a man drifting outside you.
Exactly. But, you know, on the Steve Diamond thing, you know, I know what he'll be doing. He'll be making sure the nuts and bolts basics are nailed down. You can't really nail down nuts and bolts, can you? But they'll be tightened up. he'll be tightening up those nuts and
Steve,
bolts.
Stop nailing those nuts.
Why are you nailing
bolts?
You don't need to. There's a screwdriver here, not a hammer.
Exactly. So same as Skivington, same as Borthwick. Focus on your basics. Rugby is what basics. Bath seem to completely have forgotten that.
I see Dimes probably would nail in nuts and bolts, just alpha move.
Yeah, he does what he wants. Run out of nails and use his bolts.
Nailed him in with his fists.
Yeah. But it's a hell of a win, this. It's a hell of a win because of the amount of points that they scored. I mean, if they get their first 15 out, as I always say about all teams, their first 15 is good. And I looked at this on the weekend, I thought, at home as well, they've got all of those lads out. Yeah, they'll do all right. I wonder who Finn Smith's... Finn Smith, right, has signed a 5-year contract with Worcester.
Nice.
5-year contract. Which they didn't sneak out. They didn't renounce that because they don't want people to know.
Is that since Dimes is in that they've done that?
Good question. Don't know.
Because he did that with the Curries.
He did do that with the Curries.
Because, well, I'm not taking it because Jonathan Thomas probably had a big part to play with it. But when you know someone is talented for the reasons that you talked about on last week's podcast, get them nailed down.
On low value as well.
I wonder if they'd have won this if Owen Williams was playing or if Owen Williams had been playing for last week because. It's last few weeks because he's getting some good game time now, Finn Smith, and he's only going to get better.
As disappointing as Bath were, I just love Saints. I really like Chris Boyd. He's stuck to his guns.
Yeah.
Through those times where it looked like, well, yeah, you've come to the Northern Hemisphere now, mate. You can have all the flash rugby you want. You need to be able to scrummage and stuff. He has totally stuck to his principles, and they're so good to watch.
Mm. They are quite cool.
And having Augustus as well.
Oh, what a boy.
Is the kind of guy...
Big, that strong boy.
He is a big, strong boy. He is the kind of guy that they've missed for the last couple of years. They've had some talented players, but they need a bit of heft. And if they can... They got their scrum really right a couple of weeks ago against Bristol. If they can get their set piece really firing, they've got a decent chance of being competitive towards the end of the season.
I don't think they have the personnel for it.
No, that's the caveat. Like if they can, I mean, if Paul Hill and Aaron Painter become the players that they have the potential to be, they may well have the personnel for it. But if they don't, if we see more of what we've seen over the last few years, which has been hit and miss, shall we say?
I like Sam Matavesi a lot. Alex Waller's an old timer with a lot of experience. And you're right about the potential of those two other lads, but I just don't think there's enough in that front row to be competitive continuously. And that's
not
the problem.
I think they will be competitive. It's the concern is business end of the season when they go up against the Saracens or an Exeter front row. That's when it matters. You can be competitive. You can beat up Bristol or Bath, but when you go against those two in knockout rugby, can you then be competitive? And I'm not sure they can answer that question.
That's exactly where I am. I will say this though: their front row options, particularly Paul Hill, very good in the loose. Mm-hmm. And Massavesi, very good in the loose.
Yeah.
But maybe, again, they don't... You know, Augustus is good for them because he's one of their very few big ball carriers.
Painter's going to be a player.
Aaron Painter's just enormous, mate. He's just enormous. Exactly. Whether he's athletic enough or not, though. Whether he ends up at La Rochelle, I do not know.
Here's a thought. Because this has been confined to Premiership, pretty much. Premiership and Santa's Grotto. Mm. Why don't we just end this here, and we'll just do another. We'll do another short pod, just focusing on Europe,
and also the Welsh teams.
Yes, and the Ultimate Fighting Championship as well.
Well, not all of it.
Ultimate
just like,
Rugby
just
Fighting Championship.
The, yeah, that's which we like. Yeah. Could we please not mention the Ospreys game? Ulster lost to Ospreys.
Yes, yeah, so after beating right. Leinster as well.
Yeah. Oh.
So yeah, so we'll look at all the issues that have been going on with those Welsh regions. Well, and like Munster managed to just fly into South Africa and just basically just go keep the engine running.
Spin it around. Spin it around.
Yeah, let's get out of here.
No one's dying of Omicron, but spin it around.
Yeah. So yeah, we'll talk about that on a sort of Europe focused just quick podcast that will be in your feed.
Yeah, perfect.
Should we do that? Right. All right. Let the boys play.
Let the boys play.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.